Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE, and on this podcast, we feature a keynote address by Linda Baer, Principal Senior Consultant and Founder of i4Now Solutions. Her presentation is entitled, As the Future Catches You.
A while back, I read a book called As the Future Catches You, and of course I loved the title, so I just took it as the theme from here on where we might go on a little travelogue into the future. One of my favorite quotes, and some of you may have seen a variation of this, but we are educating for careers that have not been created using technology that hasn't been invented to solve problems that haven't been discovered, to students that are changing every single day, learners changing every day. And if you haven't seen the YouTube Shift Happens, I would welcome that you would go to that and take a look at it, just because it's a stunning situation of exactly where things are moving today. During lunch, we actually talked about the critical importance and nature of higher education. And in fact, we have many people that have decided that higher ed and the future of higher ed is really something we need to take more into account. And in fact, as you said at lunch, it really bridges on our national security. And some of you might be of the era that I am, that there was actually a national defense loan to help fund students going to college to become teachers, particularly in the STEM fields, engineering at that time, because we felt it was so important that the scholarships were actually called national defense scholarships. But we have slipped, and that should be of concern to us, because we must be globally competitive out there, from down to the individual student all the way to our communities, to our states and regions and our country. And we're falling behind. Many countries, and that As the Future Catches You book actually points out, many countries have leapfrogged in the relation to how they decided to support education, because they knew it was the critical ticket for them for the future of their whole being and their whole placement in the world order. Even with high unemployment, though, we have employers that are still having problem filling jobs. And in fact, some would say this recession fundamentally can be traced to the idea that we just don't have enough people in the right positions as the shifting sands of the economy are trying to gel somewhere. We do know also that 2/3 of the jobs of the future will require 2- and 4-year college education by 2018. You know, numbers are numbers. We're needing them now. The idea that people still think they can get out of high school and be ready for this world just is not fair to them. And we also know how many people don't even get out of high school and sometimes even middle school. And so there's a crisis out there. There's a real issue, an urgency of figuring out what are we going to do so that more students can be successful. And we know also that our businesses are telling us you've got to align better. You've got to align what you're doing in your educational opportunities so that it's more up to date and more refreshed and more ready, because business and industry continue to have to retrain, retool, and educate people to come out of our 2- and 4-year schools that they would have thought were ready. So we are finding that that's also one of those things on the urgency list. Yet we can still say, regardless of anything else, that education pays. This chart happens to show you that those with median income shows far more depending on the higher your educational level goes. But certainly the idea of less than high school diploma and high school diploma and even some college, you know, some would say, well, just get some college. But the idea that you have not completed is really critical in your life chances and your ability to continue to earn in your, and throughout your lifetime. Likewise, the unemployment rates, you can see that very high in that less than high school diploma era. And we have your communities, our communities, the cities around the country are showing evidence of that, and particularly the high unemployment in young adults, which is really, really serious, because we have more dreams that are unfulfilled then, and people that just can't figure out where are they going. Well, I'm going to talk about four challenges, and You know, it was even hard for me to decide these four challenges. I was still debating them this morning. I'm going, well, which of the challenges should I really grab on today for this audience? And what would I say about them? And I think for your purposes, you know, should you decide to take some of this and work with some of your strategic planning, you know where your challenges are. And they probably reside somewhere in these. But as Diana had said, things about the organizational capacity and the idea of where are you. EDUCAUSE as an organization is a fabulous organization to help in terms of the training and upgrading and professional development opportunities for people on campuses. But we've got to expand that more. We've got to get more presidents at the table. We've got to get more provosts at the table so that they're hearing and listening and able to speak the same language when it comes to organizational capacity for the future. So we're going to talk about these four: completion challenge, funding challenge, capacity challenge, and innovation challenge. If you go to the completion challenge, one of the things that we talk about is community college students are in trouble. Now, this has a little bit of a flavor to community colleges simply because so much of the work with the Gates Foundation was focused on community colleges. For example, when you look at all of the funding and foundations outside money going to campuses, probably 90% goes to four-year universities, with maybe 10% going to community colleges. And so part of the emphasis for the Gates Foundation and for Lumina Foundation and others with the Achieving the Dream and the Completion by Design work was to get more emphasis and more understanding of what's going on with these access opportunity colleges. But the students are in trouble, and they're in trouble for a lot of different ways, and they don't even know it oftentimes. They show up and think, you know, sometimes we would have people come to Bemidji State, for example, which happens to be in northern Minnesota between three Indian reservations, but American Indian reservations, and they would come and they wouldn't even know the trouble that they were in when they got there. And sometimes they could have been top of their class or doing well that they thought. And it shouldn't be that way. We shouldn't have that much misalignment or confusion about what is it to be successful. But yet we still seem to have a misalignment, particularly between high schools and colleges. And so that's one of the places where we need better partnerships, better understanding, and less finger-pointing. I've been through that. Oh, it's your fault. You create the teachers that come to our schools that then, you know, teach the students who aren't ready. And we would say, but students come from your place, and they come to the college or the university, and they're not ready. And what good was all that about? Instead of saying, what are some of the best readiness criteria? What are some of the completion criteria we need to be talking about? One of the biggest issues on our horizon right now is remediation and developmental education. Now, I would testify in front of the legislature, and they would go, just stop doing that remediation in colleges and universities. Just stop doing it. As if magically, hocus pocus, it would go away, right? And I would say to them, politely, of course, use it or lose it. With mathematics, you know, I would say, you know, how many of us can just pick up a math problem today and whiz through something? Use it or lose it kind of thing. Or that many students don't take the math prep. So some of your states are finally coming around and saying at least 3 years of math, if not four, should be required for high school graduation. They're beginning to align college prep with high school graduation. But if you had the kind of communities that I've been in before, they would say, well, so many of our students just aren't ready and never will go to college. And I go, and that was a school superintendent. And I would say, for the very fact you're saying that, you're sending the messages to these students that some of them just are never going to go to college. Now, they may not, but they at least need to know that their life chances need to include advancing their opportunities. They have to get through high school in a strong way, and they have to continue to get some post-secondary education. Now, the other kinds of issues that we're going to be talking about is less than one quarter of all students go on to earn any degree or certificate in 8 years anyway. So here they come into college, and they were the ones that were admitted. You know, I say, you took them in. You accepted them. Don't you think there's an obligation to assist them to get through then? And very few, that's not a very good sign. And if you looked at the at-risk students, probably you could say maybe 11% of them ever finish. Those aren't numbers to be proud of, folks. That's not going to get us into that globally competitive era. And finally, This is a knowledge economy, and all of the incumbent workers that have been able to keep their jobs during this shifting economy have to have their opportunities to continue to retool and progress and improve. And one of the problems we're finding is for adult learners in the workforce, many of them attended college but didn't complete. And so some of the states, and I know Minnesota is one of them, trying to work on something called graduate, particularly targeting students that had 90 credits or more. That's at least what we would count as 3 years, probably. Why didn't they finish? Why didn't they get to that final time to finish? And what could you do to help align and assist them? Some schools are doing a rather interesting thing. Say that people went to a university, and I'm going to use University of Texas, El Paso. They go to the university. They aren't transfer students. They've gone directly in to the University of Texas, El Paso. When the students acquire and accomplish the 60 credits and in the right courses that would have equaled an AA degree, University of Texas, El Paso calls El Paso Community College down the way. Anybody here from Texas? I better ask that before I go. There you go. Okay. Originally. Okay. Well, my son was born there. We can claim a little, you know, there you go. See how connected people can be. So where was I going with that? Well, if a student got 60 credits at the University of Texas, El Paso, and it equaled the AA, so it was what we might call the university core requirements or general education core, they call up El Paso Community College and say, this student finished. And they don't have to go back to El Paso Community College and do a bunch of paperwork. They get an AA degree in the mail. They paid for it. They accomplished it. Why not? And why aren't we doing that? Might be a lot of questions going on here. Why we should do it is it gives the student a milestone degree accomplishment. Because where'd we go back there? Less than a quarter students go on to earn any degree or certificate in 8 years. If they had the 2-year degree in hand, it gives all kinds of motivation and all kinds of doors that open out there in the world of work. Well, let's go on. The completion rates, look at that. Now, that's 96 to 2005, but look at how pretty level they are. You can't see the numbers, but the red ones happen to be the four-year institutions, and what you're probably seeing is gray. Very, very stable. Now, I have to say something about that. All the research that's gone on, all the unique things that have gone on, we know more about learning than ever before. Are we applying it in the classroom? We went through the teaching paradigm to the learning paradigm, supposedly. We've gone online. We've done all kinds of things. And what happened to student completion rates? Level. We should be asking ourselves what's going on there. And not only that, but if you start looking at some of the other things that are our paradoxes, we have to take a look at that as well. Because in this paradox, and I'm not going to go through all the detail, but this is available to you. The idea is we've got competing issues going on. At the time when we need more educated people than ever before, of course, the budgets are being crammed and crammed and crammed. And so the resources are being limited. And not only that, but as in the state of California, what I've got is statistics here. They're turning away 250,000 students a year, probably 650,000 total to 1 million. Can any state afford to turn away 1 million students? But they have to turn them away because if you don't have the money to serve them, and they already went through this, let's balance with online and on-site and do hybrid and get twice the students coming into the facilities because they don't have enough bricks and mortar. They're doing what they can, but look what 32% of community college students unable to enroll in classes. So there are things that are going on. Community college has grown 20% in the last 3 years. Meanwhile, budgets have been tanking. We've got all of the statistics, and you might be one of the states where somebody's saying to you, your share of getting to the 1 million more graduates equals this many more. Right? So you're supposed to increase the number of people graduating. More completions under these extreme budget cuts going on. And the globalization issue that says we need to know more. We need to have deeper thinkers, more creative people, more imagination and innovation. That's been one of the hallmarks of how wonderful the United States has been able to expand and do what they've been able to do over the decades. But we've got declining family ability to pay over and over again. All those people that are out of work that maybe thought they were going to send their kids to school or help them, or they were going to refinance their house to help pay for the kids to go to school. Not happening today. Dreams deferred. Well, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the financial issues. It is a little better than it has been. As you see, with this chart says largest state budget shortfalls on record. Last recession, 2002 to 2005, showing you a comparison point. If we thought that was bad, take a look at the bigger numbers, the far bigger numbers for 2009 to 2013 projections of how much is going on here in terms of ongoing shortfalls. These shortfalls predicate the idea that we can't continue to do business as usual. That our system, if we're going to be able to serve the number of students we need to be serving, and the more at risk and harder to serve students than ever before, we've got to be doing something different. And then comes this interesting chart that shows you that college tuition and fees is the top line, growing faster than medical care, family income certainly, and the consumer price index. Far greater growth in terms of college tuition and fees. And we know why. Because state ability to supplement at least public education going down, therefore tuition's gone up, but more than the percent in medical care. And interestingly, just recently, the total U.S. student loan debt is now up to $870 billion that they're holding, which is more than the national auto loan debt or credit card debt, according to an article from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. What's going on there? I mean, credit card, okay, we take our college out on a credit card, and then we're stuck with the loan. Well, what I think we need to work more on and far deeper, and there are people like Jane Wellman out there with the Delta Project talking about what are some sustainable business models given all of this. And we have many that are beginning to show us exactly how they can make going to school more affordable. But it breaks down a lot of the traditional elements that we've been used to that we think are, you know, sacred things that can't be changed. And so what I usually say to people is, when you go home, if you're a public institution, go find a for-profit and have a little conversation with them. Or if you're a for-profit, it'd be nice if you'd go and talk to some of the people that are the publics. When I was in the system office in Minnesota, we had a collaborative with the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and Capella. And my boss said to me, Linda, you better be careful with whom you're dancing. You better be careful with whom you're dancing. I said, I'm very careful. I'm always careful, wouldn't you know? But the idea that, you know, and he said it, I guess, in jest. But the issue was, he said, why are you talking to the for-profit? The for-profits. And I said, because they're pioneering things we can't do because of some of the constraints that we exist in. So metrics for the 21st century, we're going to talk a little bit about the productivity. How do you improve productivity? This is the one industry that gets by with productivity numbers that nobody else would be able to go by. And I'm telling you that I think the feds, your publics, the legislatures, taxpayers are saying enough already. How can that keep getting more and more and more expensive, but you got stagnant completion? And, well, what's a college education worth when we get down to it? Well, let's talk about capacity a little bit, and we could take a long time about that. But leadership for a new age, probably heard that term over every decade, leadership for a new age. I used to tell people when they were interested in aspiring to the next job up, the next position, the next career move, take a look at the Chronicle of Higher Ed and look at what they're saying about what the job qualifications look like. And my colleague and I, when we were honored to be able to write a book for the EDUCAUSE Leadership Series in 2001, Diana, it's that long ago, Ann Hildoen and I wrote Partnering in the Learning Market Space. Partnering in the Learning Market Space for the EDUCAUSE Leadership Series. And we found over and over again that rarely would anybody say, you know, plays well with others. Proven record of collaborating or working with school districts or other colleges or universities or business and industry. There were a lot of other things, fundraising and working with, you know, campuses and long-term proof of being able to work on a campus. But even today, if you start looking at the hirings of leadership in higher ed today, they're going outside higher ed sometimes saying it's time to shake up the paradigm. Teaching and learning, a paradigm, but where's the student success in all of that? And I kind of call it the Darwinian way of looking at education, the survival of the fittest. You know, maybe some of you went through schools where they would say, look to the left and look to the right, you know, one of you won't be here. And lo and behold, that's kind of what happened, you know, kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy happening there. Teams, collaboratives, and crossing boundaries, absolutely critical for this era. We cannot do it alone. We cannot do it alone and do the right by our students or by enough students or do right by our communities or do right by the country. We have to get back and forth with K-12. We have to put some of our teachers back into K-12 and K-12 teachers into the colleges and universities, the colleges of education. We have to understand better. You know, these long-term faculty sometimes haven't been back out into the industry, have they? So we need more crossing of boundaries. We also need to think more about the sustainability of our very enterprise. I was saying at lunch, I guess I'll say this. So I had a slide that said, and I took it out of here, but I said 500 colleges aren't here anymore. They just don't know it. 500 institutions are gone. They don't know it. And it's a paraphrase of the newspaper industry. The newspapers were dead in 1998 or whatever, but didn't know it yet. Well, I had that in one of my presentations for Gates, and they didn't always watch what I was doing, but they wanted a copy of my slide set. And that was the one time they said, you must take slide 20 out. You can't say that because it's not what we say at Gates. And I said, okay. But some of the people decided to go analyze it, and they went out to higher ed to see where finance people were. And you probably know there are places down the road that are small, private campuses, small religious schools that either have had to merge or whatever. You probably saw the headlines, will universities go the way of Borders bookstore? You know, that's a little extreme. That's a little extreme, but 500 out of the thousands that we have. But I'm just saying that the mental model is, well, we're immune to that kind of stuff. Well, I'm sure Borders probably said that, and so did Encyclopedia Britannica, and so did maybe the post office. So kind of take a look. The other thing that I find very interesting is a culture of inquiry, that idea of constantly using your information, not only having access to it, because we all have probably more data than we ever know what to do with, but using it for significant decision-making. And what I've found studying some of the NESE work, the National Survey for Student Engagement, they use a quote of persistent restlessness, that as I've interviewed even the top campuses and doing wonderful things with student engagement and student success, they go, but next year we're going to do this because it'll make it even better. And McAllister, one of the top ones on the list for NESE work because of really a stellar operation, but that persistent restlessness of continuing to try to do something better. Well, here's one of those things that came up recently. Badges earned online pose challenge to traditional college diplomas. Well, what they're showing is chunking of competencies. And you're going to see that in some of the other things. In one of the books, and I think it was the Innovating University, one of the quotes came from Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. Our duty is to wholly reinvent ourselves. We are America's future, intellectually, socially, and culturally. So that's a shake-up statement. If you go to the challenge of innovation, you know, higher ed has been as much the innovative incubator as anything. And I remember one of the really great keynotes at one of Educause's conferences that talked about the academy that was both the monastery and the marketplace. Think about the person down the hall from you. Do they like the monastery view of it or the marketplace view of it? That, yes, it's a place where you incubate ideas and it's sort of a protected, yes, protected under academic freedom and all of those kinds of things, but also squarely living in the communities and the regions funded by those people and expected to be in the chaos of what's going on as change is happening all around. But right now, we lack a business model that can really help us understand how to do innovation. One of the things my colleague Ann Hildoen and I wrote about was the fact of when you are trying to do new and unique things, oftentimes we find that campuses, if they decide to pick it up, bolted on to their institution, sort of bolted on. And then you kind of wonder, well, why doesn't it get picked up here and there? Why isn't it expanding better? Well, because it never was fully integrated into what was going on. Other places, and sometimes this is the R&D function, and certainly with businesses when they're doing innovation, is they have spin-offs where they let things incubate. 3M of Minnesota was always well known for that with some of their opportunities. Plus, they also gave their workers specific time that they could invest time in those innovative things or thinking great thoughts. And, you know, oftentimes it was serendipity how they came up with something like the Post-it note was a mistake. I don't know, you know, the Post-it note, it was, they were trying out glue for something or other, and they thought it failed. And somebody said, wait a minute, that has some opportunities. We should try that out. So part of this is, you know, it's human nature to kind of like our status quo, like where we are. We don't want to change. There's a great book called Immunity to Change. We can slow down anything we want to, can't we? Even when we've got the data, and we can say we've got good data, they will challenge it. I was saying about one campus that was talking about, you know, our students don't show high levels of engagement from the NESI score. Faculty said, students must not have known how to answer that question. They must have gotten it confused or something. Why would, you know, it just can't be. We got higher retention. We got pretty good retention rates. So we always have something about, well, the data just might not be good enough. And then comes that suspicion of for-profits. Haven't we sort of demonized? Anybody here from the for-profits? I should be asking that. There you go. See, you're a good buddy. Everybody should come over and talk to this person. Where are you from? There you go. There you go. You got to talk about people that don't always have the same constraints that we do. And then I've got accreditation system down there, which we could talk about. I gave a talk once on with some colleagues about accreditation, accountability, assessment, and analytics, all kind of connecting the dots. But some would say that accreditation has held back the innovative spirit. I think that there are some great opportunities going on if you choose to participate in them. For Higher Learning Commission, I think the AQIP model and their new pathways is going to begin to give some new excitement in a process to do different things. Well, let's move on a little bit to trends for the future. I've got a couple trends to watch. And this one is new models of blended and online courses. Because the fact that so many things are going on everywhere. So whether it's the open course networks or the repositories or the learning object places, the idea of the National Center for Academic Transformation with Carol Twigg, the Math Emporium from Virginia Tech. I mean, just a little sidebar. Somebody from Minnesota decided they'd put one of these Virginia Tech Math Emporiums together. And in Blacksburg, they had a big old shopping mall that went down. And so the VPI, I call it VPI, what do they call themselves? Virginia Tech now. I actually went there for a year, so we called it VPI. But this was an old shopping mall, and they put a whole huge bank of computers in there, and they staffed it with graduate students, probably 24/7. And it was a math lab. Now, any of you that have been in a course that kind of gave you some difficulty and you're kind of wondering, can I get through this or not? And you go, oh, you know, I'll have to wait 2 weeks from now to go see the faculty member. Or maybe you could email and you might get a response. Or maybe there was a TA to help or blah, blah, blah. This is immediate response. If you've got a question, what happens? Well, one of the schools in Minnesota decided to pick this up and they did it. And, you know, they said that it took two students being successful to pay for the operation. This is return on investment calculation. The idea of what does it take to end up paying for something that ends up doing so much good. Because it was immediate response. It's sort of like what you're going to see embedded in curriculum now with smart tutors and avatars. But lots going on, including Western Governors, started in Indiana as a franchise an actual bricks and mortar franchise, but a Western Governor's operation behind the scene, but called Indiana. Now in Washington, now in Texas, soon to come to probably a state near you. A different opportunity that's competency-based, very affordable, very connected to business industry and what's going on, and it happens to be one set of opportunities for a certain set of students. The second trend is to watch is do-it-yourself, the do-it-yourself university. Now, we used to have a real franchise on this, you know. Higher ed was the one that did the credentialing, and, you know, people could complain all they wanted, but we were the credentialers. We were the ones that gave, awarded diplomas, degrees, certificates, etc. Not anymore. You saw the badges. We'll see where all that goes. But if you haven't read Do It Yourself University by Anya Kamenetz, take a look at it. Very interesting. These are the edupunks. These are the students, very bright, looking for where they want to go and what they want to do and where they can get what they need. And they're not looking for what's easy. They're not looking for what gets by. They're looking for the challenge they need, where they can find it as they can need it. Now, rate my professor. I was going to say endure many, many statewide meet and confers because the state of Minnesota is very highly unionized. And I remember one meet and confer where, anybody here from Minnesota before I go talk about this? Okay, you can all go back and report what I'm going to say then. Okay, because the faculty came to me and said, Linda, why are you letting students use Rate My Professor? Stop them. I said, I think the train has left the station. There's not going to be much that anybody's going to do about Rate My Professor. You know, they don't think your evaluation may be doing the trick. They're doing their own. Likewise, the Khan Academy, and I got a little reference point here, but did you anybody see the 60-minute deal on Khan Academy? Hey, not bad. Young man decided he was going to help a relative get through algebra, found, hey, this works. Small bursts of information. Adaptive exercise software platform. You're doing well here, then go here. Kind of pathways to help you where you are, where you need to go to continue to be successful. Take a look at the website. Mastery-based approach, collaborative learning, focus with a coach, both teacher, parent, advisor, all together. Dashboard, this is pretty cool. The dashboard that provides real-time data on student performance to individual students, as well as their teachers, mentors, and parents. So it's empowering students. You know, I don't know about you, but, and I'm really dating myself. Okay, so most of the time I knew where I was with a midterm degree, a midterm test, and a final. That was often the way it was. This way, real time, where are you? Kind of like what Signals Project is at Purdue, but kind of interesting. And in fact, you get little indicators for good listening, good participation, showing motivation. So some of the non-cognitive side that helps students be more productive and more successful. Well, third is big data and analytics, which we could take a long time on. I like to say that analytics is the universal decoder for education reform. The universal decoder for education reform, because it's going to get to the heart of the issue. And don't you think, this is a decoder ring. I just want you to see this up here, because I found that online. I want you to know, and so you have to be of a certain elk to remember decoder. But if you've read The Lost Symbol, you know, this idea of what turns and twists and comes out with a magical aha, well, I think the same metaphor could work in relation to using analytics to hone in on what really makes the difference all around. Well, big data, you've probably seen the article, the report from McKinsey. I got the reference point down there. The next frontier for innovation, competition, and productivity. All together, big data will do it for you. Well, we know not necessarily, but what it will do is unlock significant value by making data more transparent and usable. We need everybody having access to the data. Don Norris and I have made presentations often on this, and we have the bucket chart. Which bucket of data do you need most, and how can you access it if you are a student, if you're a faculty member, if you're an advisor, if you're a trustee, if you're a legislator, you know, lots of things going on there. Transactional data, more accurate and detailed. A place where you can't question the integrity of the data. And then, as in big data for business industry, it allows for far more segmentation of your population and your market. Well, for us, we can segment by learner needs far more than ever before and tailor that. It also should improve decision-making. I mean, I don't know, but I'm still hearing a lot of ad hoc going on here in terms of making your decisions and how you do it. Fundamentally, people saying they were data deprived. Their campus was data deprived. And I'm wondering, this is the 21st century, 2012, and then how are those decisions being made? Finally, what we really hope to see more of is improving the development of next-generation products and services. One of the things the Gates Foundation has supported is Next-Gen Learning Challenge. EDUCAUSE has been very good in the relationship of facilitating and leading the choice of those and the convening and the bringing together of those best practices that's going on in terms of next-gen. Next-gen in hybrid courseware, next-gen in actual gateway courses, next gen in learning analytics, and then a next gen in what can help in the social mobile apps side of things. Well, I really like Thomas Davenport's work in this. And this happens to be an easy way of thinking about analytics, and it came from his book called Analytics at Work. He calls it the Delta. Accessible, high-quality data, enterprise orientation. You've got to be system thinkers here. And that's one of the things you got to take down the silos and the fragmentation we've had going on here between student affairs and academic affairs, between K-12 and higher ed, analytical leadership. One of the things that EDUCAUSE is going to continue to work on are places where chunks of good professional development can come together and help people know more about analytics. It's one thing to collect data. It's another thing to actually have predictive analytics, strategic targets that you know can articulate and are success targets for the future, as well as the analysts that can do the work. Well, it's going to be somewhat like the Amazon.com predictive modeling that says readers like you might like this. Well, what if students like you might do better by using these kinds of tools and going to these kinds of opportunities? Lots of vendors out there. We're doing a research project with 20 vendors doing a review of what's on the market right now and how does it match up and align with what institutions are saying they need. But this one happens to be talking about reporting analytics, the forecasting risk analytics, the idea of optimizing, which is one of the things Davenport talks about, is what if you were optimizing student success? And then finally, visualization, the way to get the data out to where people can see it, use it, and have it when they need it. Well, e-textbooks, quickly, I just thought this was kind of cool because the e-textbook is going to be one of those trends that's going to change things. I hope it changes it for the affordability side of things. Publishers at the table. But publishers, you know, now gathering an awful lot of data about people in relation to what's going on, both in terms of what faculty are doing and what students are doing. Technology on the horizon. I just make a plug for the On the Horizon project here. There's a URL for it, but you probably all have seen this. I'm not going to take a lot of time. But mobile applications, tablet computing, the idea in 2 to 3 years, more game-based learning and learning analytics. And then 4 to 5 years, gesture-based computing and Internet of Things. Now, we're seeing a lot of this already. It's kind of swirling. The Internet of Things is like the smart refrigerator that tells you your milk is bad, go buy it, except it sends it to your car phone that calls you. The car calls you and you know, that used to be, whoa, that's way out there. But no, it's possible now with all of the coding that they do on food. The idea of mobile applications and tablets, well, this is Arwen, and it's Arwen Linda Bear, my granddaughter, and she is a dear. And she told her mommy and daddy what she wanted for her birthday, and my husband said, do we have to start saving now or later? But she wanted a tablet. They have an iPad. She wanted a tablet. And others have found they go off and they buy toy computers. Any of you bought toy computers for little kids? Yeah, you know, We think a toy computer. You know, what was my comment? Well, is it kid-proof? I mean, if she drops it, what's going to happen? Now you see the applications that say, get the preschooler, the tiny toddler, the idea. My grandson took his first crawl toward my cell phone that was shining just about three crawls beyond where he was, bright and shiny. Well, really adapting and adopting fast. And when it goes to school, wonderful things begin to happen. I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes on Steve Jobs, but there they featured the idea of iPads for autistic children, iPads for speech therapy, iPads for all kinds of things. It's a new world. And I would tell you, if you start thinking creatively about where the cloud is going to take us, because the cloud is an integrating capacity for us and a place where we can store a whole lot more than we've ever stored before, and suddenly we give power to a lot of people, including students. Michael Crow from Arizona State University, which has a very good approach to student success and analytics, says, by establishing the new criteria for success, we are choosing not to participate in a race that has already been lost. Leadership that can say things like that. What are the metrics of the future? What are the metrics for success? Are the things we've got to keep looking at. I'm going to wrap up and then hold for a couple of questions if we've got some time. But I have a colleague, Michael Matthew, who wrote after Steve Jobs died, what if Steve Jobs had been an educator? And Michael Matthews decided that he probably would have been moving toward a technology called an educational positioning system. And in that, it would map a starting point. You are here. You want to be there. Here are some alternative routes to get there. Here's what the ROI, or return on value, is. And, you know, the feds are starting to say, you better start saying, how long does it take to become an engineer? And how much is it going to cost at place A? And how long will it take for you to ever pay it back? Or med school, or vet school, or many other places. Fuel for the journey, meaning the economics of it. Travel time norm for destination. How are the others in my class doing? And some of the dashboards are beginning to... And the highway for optimizing student success. And it's in this kind of, and this is in prototype, this futuristic, you know, it could just be an iPad if you could afford it. But here is a ScrollFlex PC. And with the cloud capacity of storing the student's individual data, suddenly the student's carrying around their information, where they are, where they want to go, what their funding options are, what their ACT, SAT score might be, what their results are, as they have other tools that help them move along the way. Well, maybe stay tuned and take a look at what's going on here. But what it really is, you know, the LMS ends up being owned by the institution. It's individually based in terms of the institution. What the EPS is owned by the student, empowering the student to take more responsibility for who they are and where they want to go. So this could be one of those transforming moments when the trends start coming together, when the opportunities start colliding and recreating new syntheses of things that become even better to serve our students to optimize their success along the way. You are important people. You have to be at the table. One of the things I've been finding in the research I've been doing is IT folks must be at the table with IR folks, as well as student affairs and academic. You've got to be there in teams. You've got to be understanding that we're all on the roadmap together, moving toward what can improve what's going on. And to finally wrap up, if educational completion is one of the most prized and valuable destinies for every American student, surely we need to innovate and market a vision that leverages the technologies and tools that will completely eradicate the educational risks of taking wrong turns, running out of gas, miscalculating the distance, underestimating the cost, and then the ability to have a norm to compare a personalized educational journey against. Nobody goes into college thinking, I'm not going to stay. I don't think they go thinking, well, I'll probably fail in a year. So what we need to do is optimize their success. You're here to be successful. We're all here to help you be successful. So with that, there we are. The future is going to be what you make it. And I hope you learn a lot during your conference here to help you tool up for that future that's on the horizon. Thank you.
Linda Baer, Principal Senior Consultant and Founder of i4Now Solutions. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.